classical BP formalism and TQFT. So so in the morning, Kevin talked about a general idea of twists, especially in the context of 3D theories. And he also discussed equations of motion, named actually solutions to these equations. And then he, you know, thought of the phase space and performed geometric quantization. Some objects of interest in geometric representation theory. So this talk, the goal is to give a more general context, not just for 3D theory, but some more general context. And the discussion is going to be a little bit more formal. So I suppose some mathematicians would like this formal approach. So I just wanted to explain this man. So the plan is that the first part, I'm going to discuss classical BV formalism. And second part is TQFT, and the third part is starting from BV, how to get something like TQFT. And you know, this afternoon session is actually not necessarily kind of the talk, it could be a discussion session, so if you have any question, feel free to ask. I have something I wanted to cover, but it's actually okay like not to cover. Justin is going to be covering kind of whatever I'm not going to be covering, so it's going to be fine. Okay, so let me start explaining kind of what I mean by classical BV formalism. Actually, in Kevin's talk, there was already a lot of kind of things that was assumed, but just for completeness, let me start from the beginning, which is that I want to start with the input data for Lagrangian formalism of a field theory. And by this, I mean the three things. One is space-time manifold. Let me just say that B-dimensional field theory, in which case this is B manifold, let's say a smooth manifold. And you also consider a space of fields, which I denote by F, but this does depend on M. And you should think of this as space of sections of a bundle over M. And finally, we have what is called action functional. And by this, I just mean a functional. So this is the input data we start with. And output of classical field theory, one can say, is what is called critical locus, collection of fields which satisfy this particular equation. And these equations, these are EOM, equations of motion. So we care about these sorts of things. So before developing this general perspective of classical BB formalism, let me just give an example. Famous example, Chern-Simons theory, as an input data, I start with a three manifold. And I actually fix simply Lie group, let's say, and then this is Lie algebra. So I'm thinking of this as a space of connections. And then, given a one form, which I think of as always a connection, the famous action looks like this. And you can find that the quick locus in this case looks like I think Kevin also discussed this, namely this quick locus consists of flat connections. So what I'm saying here is that given an input data, this three, you can always just try to solve this equation of motion, and you would end up with something which is looks like a subspace of the original space we started with. So this is first thing one can say, but this classical BB formalism says that if you're a little bit more careful about this procedure, you can actually equip this space with some additional structure. And that's actually going to be handy and useful for us. So that's what I'm going to do next. Okay, so. And for that, we are going to make a simplifying assumption, which is that now the space-time manifold is a point. So it's zero-dimensional field theory. So what I'm about to say here, of course, can be said in bigger generality. But what I want to do right now is to observe what kind of structures there is on this space. And for that purpose, it's enough to consider the simplest case. So that's what I'm doing. And let's just say that this is it itself is a space. So F is a space, which I denote by X. But maybe you should just think of this as alpha in space, Cn, really simple. And you should think of an action functional. And by an action functional, you may just think of a polynomial. And as I said, I want to understand what is actually happening to the critical locus in this simple case, and go from there. So let's see. in a sense, the ideal classical BV formalism is this critical locus in a derived manner. So what do I mean by that? By definition, first of all, we know that critical locus, you can think of this as an intersection of the following stuff. So right? I mean, if you think of the definition of critical locus, you can think of this as an intersection of these two sets. But then, this idea of, I mean, the intersection can also be understood in terms of space of function. So let me just write that way. And if you compute this, you end up with indeed the space of functions or the space you want to consider. But again, the idea, as I denoted here, is that we don't just want to consider this, we want to consider a derived version thereof. In other words, we introduce this object, dcrit, so it's derived critical locus, and definition is basically the same, except that instead of tensor product, we just consider derived tensor product. So I can be more concrete about that to give you a feel for it. Let's just consider in terms of coordinates. So if x is cn, then I'm going to be writing these things in coordinates. But before that, let me just note a few things. What I mean by functions on cotangent bundle, this is by definition a symmetric algebra of the tangent bundle over the functions on the base. So if you think of functions on the cotangent bundle, of course you have functions on the base, but you also have functions on the fiber direction. And if you have tangent bundle, that's going to define linear functions on the cotangent fiber just by pairing. And if you have quadratic function, it's going to be sim 2 of this linear function. So that's why this is, if you want, it's the definition of the functions on cotangent bundle. Okay. So in coordinates, let's say this is Cxi. Cf sum of Xn. And functions on cotangent bundle. It looks like this. and functions on the graph, if you think about it's going to be looking like this. So this is all good, but then in order to kind of perform this derived tensor product, you need to find a resolution. So what I want to do now is to find the resolution of this OX as a module over this. So which I denote by X tilde. So let me write and then explain. So this I claim is a resolution of OX as a module over O of T star X. And by that, what I mean is, first of all, this is kind of looking like a free module over this thing. That's necessary condition for this to be a resolution. But then this must be quasi-isomorphic to OX. This is the claim. And that looks, okay, let me see. So everything else, just like a usual geometry, was in commutative degree zero. But now I introduce degree minus one variable. And the differential is from here to here. If you think about, because it satisfies the like nature, if you take homology, these two variables cancel out each other. In other words, this is resolution of OX. Okay? Okay. So if you write in these coordinates, now I can actually concretely write down what this is. So let's do that. I'm just using what I wrote down here and using the definition of derived tensor product. In other words, I'm just replacing this OX by OX tilde and then compute the tensor product here. And then it's kind of easy to see what's going to happen. You know, things are going to be canceled out. So let's write down the richer. Going to be it's going to look like this, right? So in terms of variable, it's kind of clear things are canceling out. When you apply D to CI, originally it would have been just PI. But PI now is understood in this manner, and that's what I wrote down here. And in coordinates, we understand something now, is what I'm claiming, which is that, so this is degree zero variable, this is degree minus one variable, and we have additional differential. So to see what's going on, it's helpful actually to write this down in a little bit more abstract way, not just in coordinates. So what happened here, Let me just write it again. This OX tilde is actually, you can write it in this manner, together with the differential coming from this identity map there. And that's exactly, where is it? Yeah, this one. So this was degree minus one, this is degree zero, and this D, I mean, in terms of this variable, it may not look like this, but it's actually coming from the identity map. And for the same reason as before, this would cancel out, and that's why this is quasi-isomeric to OX. Okay? So the reason why I wrote in this manner is it's kind of clear from this perspective how to think of this object. So what I'm claiming here, the functions on derived critical locus, if you kind of follow through, this xi is, of course, just kind of this ox, and you would actually just end up with this vector. That's ci. In other words, in this little more abstract way, this is the expression you'd end up with. Again, xi is from here, xi is from here, and the differential, if you write in coordinates, is just exactly the same as before. So here, let me introduce this space. So I introduce minus unshifted cotangent space of X. And if you remember how I define cotangent space, you know, I can define cotangent space just by telling you kind of exactly what the functions are. And I claim that if you understood why this is defined in this manner, this shouldn't be surprising. Because again, you have the base function is always there. And now you have cotangent fiber, but cotangent fiber has a degree. But the linear functions are by definition things that are paired with this cotangent fiber to give number. In other words, you need to take kind of the linear dual. And linear dual of this minus one shifted cotangent thing should be one shifted tangent thing. But that's why this definition does make sense, I claim. If you introduce this definition, what I'm saying is that you can just write this derived critical locus as functions on minus unshifted cotangent space together with some differential, which, if you want, may think of a vector field on this space. And I want to note that I didn't use anything special about any property of S. So dependence on S is just about what is D, the differential D is. Just D, the formula for this differential is going to be changing if you think of different S. In particular, even if S was zero, which is like extremely degenerate case, you just end up with functions on minus unshifted cotangent space. And if you know a basic idea of derived geometry, what we have gained from this procedure is that to deal with essentially those cases. By that, what I mean is that when S is degenerate, if you just do the usual procedure, you may have lost some information. I mean, if it's degenerate, then you actually must have lost. But this derived perspective is just a way not to lose any information. And that's actually going to be useful for our discussion. Okay, so the fact is that there is this subject called the derived syntactic geometry, and of course it's like huge field, and a lot of technical things are happening there. But the point is that, at least for our purpose, one thing it guarantees is that, you know, if you remember, we started with a really simple example, right? But the claim is that so even if you consider more general case, you always have a structure that looks like this, minus a shifted simplex structure. Maybe it'll be helpful to write down what this minus a shifted simplex structure in this example, in coordinates. It's just the usual looking symplectic form. And note that because C1, C's, are homological degree minus one, the form itself must be of degree minus one. And that's kind of all there is to when we say that this is minus one shifted symplectic. It is a symplectic form, just like usual case, but it has a non-trivial homological degree. Okay. So far, what I'm saying is that if you start with this input data of classical field theory, you always have this minus one shifted symplectic structure. And I use quotation mark because, of course, like technically speaking, that's not exactly quite true. But I think for our purpose, it's okay to assume, yeah, what I said. It's essentially minus one shifted symplectic. And from this, the way I want to think of classical field theory is actually that if you are given a minus one shifted symplectic space, I want to think of that as classical field theory, namely converse. Of course, not every minus one shifted symplectic space deserves to be called coming from classical field theory. So let's see a little bit more examples, not just zero-dimensional case, to see what kind of things we should expect in general. For that, let's just revisit Chern-Simons theory. Already, I think Kevin was using this kind of the language kind of implicitly. So this is space of fields. Okay, so I'm going to say something here which may not make sense, but I'm going to be giving some more general context for this example. So hopefully after that, it will actually make sense. So let me write down first of all what's happening. So for us, when we say Chern-Simons theory, at least one thing you can think of is this complex. So this is in degree 0, degree minus 1, degree 1, degree 2. And if Chern-Simons theory is actually a classical field theory, which of course it should be, it must have a minus 1 shifted symplectic structure. So we abstractly figure that out in the zero-dimensional field theory case. But in what sense this three-dimensional field theory does have the structure? So I just want to say that. The claim is that, I mean, let's say, assuming that M is compact, things in degree zero and things in degree one, they pair up to give number. In other words, you know, you have one form, two form, you wedge product, and you get three forms, and you can take integration to get number. So in that sense, that's a pairing. Moreover, you actually have a pairing between zero forms and three forms in the same manner. And if you look at the degrees are adding up to one. So the pairing must be of degree minus one. Maybe I should say this one more time. I think Kevin said about this gauge symmetry. This is exactly the gauge symmetry. You know, usually kind of the, let's see. So infinitesimal version of gauge symmetry can also be encoded in this manner. I'm not necessarily explaining kind of everything about this thing because actually kind of the, in the previous version of this workshop, I spent quite a bit of time on this thing. So for this week, I just wanted to explain the formal structure and how to use it for the theme of the workshop. If you're curious, actually, you can watch the videos from the last workshop. But hopefully, kind of the today's discussion is, I don't know, kind of understandable on its own. So the claim is that one can try to write what I wrote there in a more global language. So what do I mean by that? Again, just from the previous discussion, we know that the critical locus is a local flat connections, but derived critical locus is actually, if you want, derived local system. And by that, all I mean is I don't just consider this omega 1, I actually consider this entire drum complex. So my notation of local system is kind of by default already derived. So this local system does mean, does correspond to this entire complex. And here, I introduced a new notation, EOM of M, which means the same thing as the derived critical locus. But I use this notation when I want to emphasize the dependence on this space-time manifold M. And the reason I write in this manner is to point out a new feature. Which happens in, you know, theories of non-zero dimension, which is that, you know, if you remember in Kevin's talk, he discussed a phase space. And to consider such a thing, you actually need to consider a manifold with of codimension one. So, let me write sigma for a two-dimensional manifold, which is, of course, codimension one in this three-dimensional theory. Then, you actually get this. So you want to write down the same thing, but then you realize that because it's too many four, there's nothing in the three fourths. So that's why you just end up with this. But then note that now the symplectic degree has changed. In other words, here, in order to have a kind of non-zero pairing, the pairing should be of homological degree minus one. If you apply the same logic here, one form should be paired with one form, zero form should be paired with a two form. So it has the usual symplectic structure. And this is, you know, famous, you know, phase space of Chern-Simons theory, which, you know, is the usual symplectic structure. But from this kind of presentation, I hope you get the sense. So if you consider, let's say, if I have considered one-dimensional thing, which is codimension 2, you see that it would have one shifted symplectic structure, right? So that kind of structure is, again, kind of expected in general, at least for nice theories like a topological theory. So that's the next thing I want to kind of formalize. Okay. The claim is that this idea can be formalized using what is called the AKSC formalism. So there are a few different facts I'm going to be writing down here. I'm not necessarily going to indicate, you know, how the facts can be proven, but I'm going to be using these facts to write down new examples of field theory. In such a way that Chern-Simons theory would be evidently an example. Okay, so several facts together with examples. So let me write down things first and then explain. Right. Right. That's right. But I think sort of the trigger bounder for this discussion. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. (Clears throat) more fats. So this is the most former part of the top. I couldn't quite find a way to get around with that. So apologies.
So, which of these directions, when counting dimensions, do
Huh?
you count real or complex? Like, Calabi default usually means
So
complex
this is kind
dimensions,
of the variety, smooth proper variety of dimension D.
right? But when you, but up right above that, you talked about compact-oriented D-manifolds.
Right.
That's real, or do you still mean
Right,
variety?
so this is smooth category. I mean, actually it's kind of the topological manifold, and this is variety. So these two things are can all appear in this language of derived geometry.
But the shift's the same. Okay, thanks.
Can I ask what is M sub B in this fact about compact oriented D manifolds?
Right. So I'm actually going to write down things and then maybe say a few words about every fact. Just there are too many things. I wrote down a lot of things. So let me say a few words about this. So the entire point is, at the end of the day, I want to write down minus unshifted symplectic space because that's relevant for us because we care about classical field theory. We decided that. And this fact as written here, is a way of producing minus a shifty symplectic, or more general, M minus B shifty symplectic space. And to do that, we want to have an example of X for, let's say, arbitrary B, and Y for arbitrary M. And then we just, you know, if you know all these kind of facts, then you can combine these facts to produce a lot of different examples of minus unshifted symplectic space, which I claim can recover a lot of interesting examples of classical field theory in particular. So that's why I introduced this formalism. So that was the explanation for the first fact. But then the second fact is about why. What kind of why are we going to consider for the purpose of field theory? And essentially, there are two main examples. One is N-shifted cotangent space. And I hope you have an idea of what kind of thing this is, because we have seen minus unshifted symplectic space. And in coordinates, you even know kind of what symplectic form looks like. And just like that, it just has the fiber. Now the fiber coordinate has degree N, not minus one. That's just the difference. So of course, whatever it is, it must be N-shifted symplectic. And a new fact, not maybe quite new in the sense that we implicitly use this already in the case of Chern-Simon theory, is that this BG is two-shifted symplectic. So I'm just going to leave it as a fact. Okay, now let's say a few words about this X. So X is D-oriented, and I want to produce D-oriented X. And there are these kind of the four main classes of examples. First is kind of the compact-oriented topological manifold. And
did you say what it means to be D-oriented?
I would rather not. I just want to give this kind of facts, and that's kind of the all we need for our purpose. So what I'm trying to say is that in fact, to be put in this kind of the context, this should be some sort of object in this derived geometry, and M itself is not, and this MB is just notation to denote the fact that I want to think of this M as an object of this kind of category, the category of derived geometry. So this B stands for Betty. So this is what we call the Betty local systems. And you can take this as a definition of local systems. So maps from M to BG, in general, you think of this as G bundles. But having this Betty is what makes it local systems. It's kind of a bundle, not just bundle, but you have kind of the information of local systems. And the fact is, this is 2 minus B shift is symplectic. And here, if X is Calabi-Yau, which corresponds to like this situation in the algebraic category, the same thing can be said. Now, the moduli space of G bundles on X, again, can be defined to be mapping space from X to BG. This does have the same shift, 2 minus B shift is symplectic. More fun things are over there. Do I have more chalks? Huh? Ah, thanks. So, if you have M-dimensional variety, this X drum, you should think of this as space X, but your structure shift is like a drum complex. That's what you should be imagining. In which case, you know, this behaves like a 2M dimensional real manifold, right? So that's why you have this 2M orientation. Here, this Dolbeau you can think of this as just kind of the Dolbo complex. Let's say like this. This does also behave like a 2M dimensional thing, so it has a 2M orientation. And again, you can define this kind of moduli space in this manner. This is moduli space of black connections. This is moduli space of Higgs bundles. Okay. Right. So now let's write down examples using all these facts. Examples of classical field theory as we discussed. So again, the goal is to produce minus one shifted symplectic space. And if you think about, if I actually had n shifted symplectic, that would lead n plus one dimensional theory. So let's see an example. Let's say X is symplectic, then maps from, let's say, one dimensional manifold to X, and I claim that this is logical classical mechanics. So just by writing down this mapping space from one manifold to X, you get a description of a field theory, which is called topological classical mechanics. And you note that because this is zero shifted symplectic, and this is one oriented, this entire thing is going to be minus one shifted, which is what I expect. Moreover, if you think of a point here, it's symplectic, like maps from point to X should be just X, which is symplectic. And that's again the expectation. So a manifold of codimension one, you should be getting kind of phase space, which is usual symplectic. Another example. You can think of the one shifted cotangent bundle of this space. In this case, I fixed to be collabial n-fold. And this is what is called the B-model in the context of, say, mirror symmetry. So again, because it's one shifted, if you have two oriented, the resulting guy is going to be minus one shifted, which is what we want. And if you think of codimension one guy, let's say a circle, it's going to be zero shifted symplectic, which is expected for phase space. And for codimension two, which is a point, you still have one shifted symplectic, which is as expected. So it goes like this. So let me just kind of say, you can give a lot of different examples. So let me just say, I'm just giving a few more examples, okay? Right. So if you want, you can take a definition of this drum stack or like a Dolbo stack or like Betty stack, 2B, the mapping space is actually what you usually call as a flat moduli space, or Higgs moduli space on like a local systems. So if it were just usual manifold, of course it's just kind of G bundles, but there is construction of all these kind of different, you know, subscript in such a way that this is a fact. And but for the sake of presentation, I'm actually making this as a definition, but this is known to coincide with the usual definition when they can be compared. So this is a Chern-Simon theory. So now we are having this global description of Chern-Simon theory in this manner. And again, as you can see, codomain Raman manifold, you get phase space, codomain 2, you have one shifted syntactic, and so on. And from this perspective, it's actually easy to see a definition of 4D, 5D, 6D Chern-Simon theory, where again, this M is compact oriented, and this is Calabi-Yau. So what I'm saying here is that, let's say if we have R2 times C, then you think of this space-time as four-dimensional object, you always count the dimension as a, you know, space-time manifold. And that defines a field theory, and that's what's called the 4D Chern-Simons. But you could have considered R times C2. And that's, again, the orientation, in terms of orientation, is still three oriented. So you still have field theory, and that's 5D Chern-Simons. And you could have considered just like no M, but Calabi-Yau 3-4. And then you get 6D Chern-Simon theory, also known as holomorphic Chern-Simon theory. So this AKSC kind of nicely gives all these kind of constructions. And finally, maybe closest to the theme of the workshop. If you have a symplectic space, you can think of mappings to such X as a three-dimensional theory. And this is called the Luzhansky-Witten theory. And if you note that this is just zero simply symplectic, so you may think that the parity is kind of the, not the parity, but the degree is kind of the off. But it's okay because we think of this as a, in this generality, Z2-graded theory. Odd shifted symplectic is just as fine if you just think of this as Z2 graded theory. Okay, so this was the first part, and I spent like 1 hour. Okay, so let's see what I can cover. The second part is TQFT. So again, kind of just to summarize what I wanted to talk about, it looks like I won't be able to, is first of all, describe this classical field theory, which I think is maybe less familiar than this TQFT. So maybe I can quickly go over this TQFT part. And then I want to connect these two. So what is TQFT? I mean TQFT in the sense of Adia Seeger. In this context. So for simplicity, let's just assume that I'm thinking of two-dimensional TQFT. So like this. This is, you know, symmetric monoidal category of closed one manifolds and ordisms between them as morphisms. And it's a vector space category. And we know that this is classified by commutative Frobenius algebra. The usual picture to prove this, I mean, of course, there are a lot of pictures, but I just want to note this particular one that corresponds to multiplication. I mean, you may have seen different pictures as well, like this. So these two circles are this small circle, and the outer circle is the bigger one. The fact that this is commutative corresponds to the fact that you can move these things around, and that does give the same multiplication. There is this idea of extended DPFT, where by extension I mean you can go kind of all the way down to point, not just kind of codimension 1 wafer. And again, in the 2D case, let me abuse notation and write this still as board 2. And the target category is maybe kind of the C linear category, category of similar categories. And here the point is that now we have a codimension 2 manifold, which is a point. And the claim is that this has interpretation of the category of boundary conditions. I'm introducing this because this will play important role in the later, I mean, in the coming talks of the week. So let me kind of try to explain kind of the picture for this. So for that, maybe let me also give a name for this thing too. So this may also be called as a space of closed string states. So you should imagine that a circle is floating around in whatever the space that you are considering. And the point of this extended DKFT is that now you don't just need to consider closed one wafer. You can think of things with boundary, like interval in this case. So let's say this is kind of target space, and the circle was kind of floating around. But now I want to have interval also be floating around. This just has kind of too much freedom, and that's why you need to fix this boundary condition. So what I'm trying to say is that I want to understand what you assign to an interval, but this itself doesn't make sense. You need to fix additional data, and that's what's called the boundary condition. So B1, B2, this is an object of this category. And this has name So if I have this B1, B2, B1, B2, you may think of that as some submanifold of this ambient space X. And I don't just consider all the intervals. I consider intervals that's ending, starting from here and ending there. And from this kind of the perspective, this is what we are computing. The Hamm space of this C-linear category, by definition of the C-linear category, this is a C-vector space. And what I'm saying is that this category of boundary conditions consists of these boundary conditions B1 and B2 in such a way that the Hom space is supposed to be the space of states of these kind of open strings satisfying these boundary conditions. So you should compare this with the closed string states. Here, this is kind of what happens to a circle, and this is what happens to an inner word together with this kind of the conditions on each end. So that's the interpretation one should keep in mind. Okay. So there are several things one can note for general D-dimensional TKFT. Let me just note these aspects. What you assign to D-1 sphere, the codimension 1 sphere, which is a vector space. So this is clearly a vector space. But I want to note another information, which is coming from this picture. So here, the fact that this is S1, as opposed to, I don't know, in the one-dimensional case, I guess there are not many others. But because it's S1, you draw this picture, and you see this kind of commutativity. So it's kind of the, you can draw kind of the same picture even if you have a D-1 dimensional neighbor and you have this kind of commutativity. And that structure is called the EV algebra. So I'm going to say maybe just one more word in the example transcendence theory later if you are not familiar with this. I intended to say a few more, but I'm out of time. In general, I mean, you can think of this as a if you consider a codimension 2 manifold, because it is codimension 2, you should be getting some kind of the category, linear category, just from the kind of the axioms of TQFT. But then, again, the picture, what's parameterizing this kind of multiplication is different picture. And that picture is called this ED-1 algebra. And I claim that this is the space of point operators, and this is the space of line operators, and you can go further. Maybe the way to think about this, maybe let me just say one more word. I'm kind of saying this because if you know this kind of translation, you can kind of understand quite a bit, actually, of what VG would say to you, to some extent. So this is my picture of SD-1. So if I pick a point here of D-dimensional space-time manifold, and of course, it's going to have a neighborhood. So neighborhood is maybe D-dimensional manifold, D-dimensional open set. And you can think of kind of the observables there. in the sense Kevin described. But in this TQFT, there is something called the state operator correspondence, which is saying that whenever you think of an observer, it does give a state. Maybe this picture is better. 2D picture. So we know that this is space of closed string states. The claim here is that if you add an observer here, let's say O, that's giving another state here. So there is a vacuum state here, which corresponds to, I don't know, this image of this, the unit. And whenever you have an observer, you have this new state. And the fact is that this map is kind of isomorphic. And you can take this maybe as a definition of the state of correspondence in this context. So whenever you think of the states in this kind of a sphere, it actually does know all the information of observers there and vice versa. So you can identify observers and a space of states in topological field theory. So when you see this SD minus 1, you should think of this as the boundary of open neighborhood of a point. And this point operator, information of that can be encoded by, it can be read off by what's happening at the boundary of this open neighborhood. That's the way to think. And in the same manner, if you think of line, its neighborhood is going to be line multiplied. The link is this D minus 2 sphere. So information of this line can be read off by what's happening at the boundary. That's D minus 2 sphere. So that's why this is the category of line operators. Okay. So maybe let me give some examples of PQFT. So B model is famous two-dimensional TQFT. Let's say CB. And here, let's say we target X, Calabi of N4. Is known to be the derived category coherent shapes on X. And what you assign to circle is known to be Hochschild homology of this coherent shapes X, which is differential forms on X. So this is just an example of PQFT. You can just write down. Another example is Chern-Simon theory. I'm actually not going to say anything about this thing, except that what you assign to S1, just from this discussion, it should be E2 category. And another name for this E2 category is actually Brady-Morena category. And this should be understood as so if you have studied kind of the Chern-Simon theory or related mathematics, you must have seen some Brady-Morena category. And from this contrarian TQFT perspective, you should think of that as what you assign to circle. And physically speaking, that should be understood as a category of line operators. Okay. So that's kind of the the second part of the talk. And the third part, the remaining about like 10 minutes. So third part, as I said, the first part of the talk was kind of the this description of classical VD, you know, describing classical field theory in terms of this derived symplectic geometry. And the second part was TQFT. So actually, the perspective that you can try to describe field theory using this derived algebraic derived symplectic geometry, and then perform this kind of geometric quantization to obtain objects of interest in GRT. That was kind of the developing in my work with Chris Elliott. And the general procedure of this geometric quantization is kind of independently developed by Pavel Safronov. And kind of with Justin the perspective, I mean, my work with Chris was kind of the really naive. It was only for, you have a cotangent thing and you just take out functions or the shifts on the base. And it was really naive. And we kind of developed a lot more, and then it can be applied to much more examples of interest, like a 3D, 4D theory and relation between the symplectic reality, 3D mirror symmetry, and geometric Langlands. And Justin is going to talk more about that in his talks. For my talk, which I think is supposed to be a lot more expository. Yeah, it seems like I don't really have time to talk about anything original. So let me just end with maybe a simple example. So the idea
in your last example, what does Chern-Simons theory assign to a point?
I have no idea. So that can also be, I can explain why I have no idea too, but I don't think I have time. Yeah. So basically kind of what I'm about to explain, at least the idea of it is kind of a way to construct TQFT, at least at the level of ideas, and then if you try to apply that to Chern-Simons theory, it's going to fail. The idea I have is just, in a sense, too naive. It's not going to work. The idea is to, you know, in the first section, we study this. In the second section, we get this, and the claim is that we want to have kind of the more like systematic way of doing this. So, for example, the claim is that you can, I mean, the things as you see, as you saw, kind of the, especially if it's kind of AKSZ, you have this thing, the co-dimension K thing has K minus one shifted symplectic structure. And the claim is that if you do this categorized geometric quantization, you'd actually get K shifting gives K carry. So maybe let's revisit B model. So I can just kind of explain the naive thing we can do. So in this case, we have this. Minus one shifted, and sigma is, you know, compact oriented to manifold surface. So the claim is that EOMO point is P star over X. And you can just take, you know, geometric quantization of the cotangent space is especially nice. I mean, to the extent that if it's not cotangent model, like in general, you don't even know what to do. Just take functions, right? That's kind of what you do in the usual case. But because it's kind of the one shifted, you should expect to see a category. And this is kind of the algebraic kind of the category. So that's why you would consider coherent shifts. So again, kind of the you may think it's naive, but using this kind of naive machinery together with some less naive thing, you can actually get interesting story. So in a sense, in this case, in the case of S1, it's more interesting. You can think of these maps from S1 Betty to T star 1 of X. And you can do a little bit of computation to end up with this expression. Again, like a shifted tangent space that's defined in the same manner as we discussed in the first part. So you get functions on t minus of x as a result of this geometric quantization, the naive version. And if you think about what this is, again, using definition of this shifted tangent complex, you get differential forms, which is as expected. Okay, so this is the maybe kind of the easiest non-trivial example. And though you can actually perform these things in many examples of interest, for GRT, like a couple of Witten theory, 4D equal 4, 4D equal 2, 3D equal 4, and so on. And then, I mean, not only it covers conjectures that are known, it actually, you can find kind of, I mean, you know, as always in this kind of the field of mathematical physics, once you find kind of physical context for like mathematical statement, you can do something more fun about it. Even for joint Langlands itself, you can do kind of the more fun stuff. And then if you apply this sort of thing to, say, 3D equal 4 and so on, then you actually get new statement. And that also is a new thing for joint Langlands and so on. So I think we are going to hear more about that from Justin. So I think I can stop here. Thanks.
What do you take as your target two category for this example, for the B model?
Category of Dirichlet categories.
Ah, okay. So that's where you put like the Z grading.
Right.
So I guess that you need it to be also sort of an infinity
two category? I think in order for everything to be working out like really nicely, I think you need to work with infinite two categories, but I'm not sure this is necessary for at this level.
Okay.
I think, yeah, just two categories may be fine for this.
Okay, thanks.
I would like to ask, so do you have a general formalism of how to quantize shifted symplectic space, at least in the case when it's some kind of a cotangent?
Right. So, I mean, you can go a little bit further than that, and Justin is going to explain that.
Okay.
In his talk.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
So you stated that, I mean, so basically everything can be recast in the BV language, right? Lots of classical field theories.
I wouldn't say everything, but lots
of things.
Yeah.
But I mean, not everything is a TQFD. So
exactly.
Isn't this a bit too naive, what you're doing in the last part of the talk?
Right, right. So this is kind of the, if you remember, the title of the section is from BV to TQFT.
Right.
If it's not TQFT, then the things actually come to this work that I've done and also doing with Justin, it can be applied not entirely to topological theory. So the thing is that, for example, geometric Langlands is not topological statement, right? It's about like Riemann surface as opposed to topological surface. That kind of thing can also be captured. Moreover, if you have, say, holomorphic topological twist, if you have some topological direction, then you can still do it. So it's quite a bit more general than the usual TQFD in the sense of idea seeker. In two ways. One is that we can actually cover some algebraic stuff. So it's not actually, it is, what I'm describing here is kind of the basically motivation. It's not like what I do, I guess. But you can use this kind of motivation to do something that is fun for GRT people as well. And second over, it's not topological in any sense. It's a holomorphic topological theory can also be done using this kind of formalism.
Thanks.
So can you say again what happens in Trans-Simons theory as you try to extend to zero?
So the thing is that if you try to understand, so the question is, what is this thing? So if you want to understand this, you need to write down this, which is easy because it's mapping space from point to BG, right? The thing is that if you look at the procedure, I mean, you need to choose kind of polarization, for example, and BG just doesn't have any natural thing you can do. So I have no idea how to choose polarization and then do geometric quantization in that case. That's what I had in mind for, I have no idea. I said, I have no idea.
But I don't know, but I thought I saw there are some proposals in the literature. So what's the status? Like they're known to be wrong or it's like unknown?
No, I mean, I wouldn't say that. I mean, actually, I'm not an expert in that business. All I'm saying is that this way of thinking, that kind of my way of thinking, it's not going to have error for this current status. I just don't know.
All right, any questions on mine? Please unmute yourself if you'd like to ask anything. Otherwise, let's thank Phil again.